Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups Podcast. From the student hotel to a 2 billion hospitality powerhouse, my next guest redefined what it means to stay, work and connect in cities across Europe. With 20 plus hubs built across the continent and a mission rooted in purpose and connection, he's not just building hotels, he's building communities. Please welcome the founder and CEO of the Social Hub, Charlie McGregor. Charlie, such a pleasure to have you on the show.
What an intro. Thank you.
Nice. I like that you liked it. Awesome. Charlie, take us back to the beginning. What was the original spark, you know, that made you think, I'm going to reinvent the hotel?
Yeah, it started for me a little bit earlier. I grew up in the 80s in the shadow of my dad, who was building student accommodation. So I used to see his buildings and stuff like that. And I remember helping him, carry furniture in and take furniture out of these buildings. I was like, why is it all the same? You know, from one project to the other, it's all the same colors, all the same shitty little furniture. And he was like, well, who cares, son? It's students. And it kind of stuck with me. And if I fast forward all that time, I got involved in student accommodation in the UK. And then 22 years ago, I moved to Holland. And on my first little bike ride around the city, I came across a protest of students. And they had like these bed sheets with broomsticks in it. And it said, yeah, students don't want to live in squats. And I was like, ah, they live in squats here? What's going on? So I went into the university and I said, hey, man, what's the story? And they said, yeah, we've got a four-year-long waiting list. I mean, work that one out if you think about it. We got a shortage of accommodation. So I was like, great. I know student accommodation in the UK. I'm going to export it and do the same model in Holland. But I'm going to take all of the lessons learned and I'm going to do it the way that I want because I believe students deserve better. And that's how I started. But the rules and regulations in Holland regarding residential are like very, very inflexible and don't really allow for innovation. And basically, a very long story short, the solution that I came up with, if I have a hotel, then I can build a room size that I know my customer wants. Yeah. I can also bring mums and dads into the story who want to, you know, we see emerging of generations in the last couple of decades, who want to come and drop their kids off and be part of that journey and stuff like that. So I started off basically as the student hotel because I had to be a hotel and I wanted to bring moms and dads into it. And that's how we started.
Awesome. I love it. I love the story. I love the student hotel. I used to live there, as you know, already. We talked off the record. Great place. Charlie, you once said people want more than a bed. What do they actually want today? And how do you create spaces that, you know, people don't want to leave or always want to come back to?
Coming back, following on from what I just said, when I opened the student hotel, I knew I was disrupting student accommodation because I gave them a big open space and I wanted to treat them with respect. I wanted to use trust and high level of design to stimulate the type of behavior I wanted. And I knew that mums and dads would come and some, you know, professors, visiting professors from the university. So I knew the hotel would work. What we saw really quickly was that we were getting many, many more hotel customers, you know, corporate travelers, leisure travelers, you know, all different ages, all different backgrounds, all different reasons to come and stay in our buildings. And what I didn't know then, which I know now, is that the hotel industry was also in need of disruption. You know, if you go back to 2015, 10, 15 years ago, the hotel world was really siloed. It had leisure hotels, business hotels, you know, all these different sort of categories of hotels. And I guess what we did is we kind of broke down those barriers. Mm-hmm. The success of my business, and that's why I get excited, is really grassroots success from those hotel customers coming in. And what we saw, to answer your question, is they were looking for this vibe where they could feel free to connect, where they could meet new people, where they were in a space where they felt open to say hello to each other. And I think what we've done is this happens in a youth hostel. When you're used to travel, you know, you start meeting friends before you wait into reception. Yeah. And if you think about your 5-star hotels, nobody really talks to anyone there. You know, you kind of get ushered into your VIP room and stuff like that. And we're just daring to break down those boundaries and bring everybody into one space and facilitate them all together. So I think that people are looking for that connection. Yeah. That's what we're offering.
That's amazing. And that's exactly a perfect segue to my next question, which is, you know, you've got students, you've got tourists, locals, digital nomads, and entrepreneurs under one roof. What's the secret to making that mix work?
You know, Martin, when we opened the building in East Haven, because we discovered Indeed You Stayed 2 years in our buildings in Amsterdam. We have two buildings. When I first started the concept and I said that I wanted to bring hotel and students and locals together, the city made me build two entrances. So I don't know if you remember in Amsterdam West, there's an entrance on the sort of Jan-Vergalenstraat on the busy side, and there's an entrance sort of the back. And I built these two entrances because the city made me. But I put a sticker on one of them saying, this is not an entrance. And I made everybody walk in the back door. And and what we saw was that everybody was afraid of what would happen by mixing locals, you know, workers, co-workers, hotel guests, leisures and corporates, and students together. And what I always believed is that everybody's just going to get along just fine. And in fact, everybody's going to really enjoy being in an environment where there's young, old, rich, poor, you know, all the different demographics mixed together. So it's just trusting our community that people are good and they do want to be together.
I love it. And that's actually, you know, not always bringing like-minded people together creates something, like creates a community, creates spark. Sometimes actually bringing different people from different backgrounds with different mindsets, different experiences together, this is what can create it, like a real community, real disruption, real. I love it. Totally agree with that. And just for the record, I stayed at the Student Hotel 1 year. I stayed 6 months in the Student Hotel West, and then in the city. I just moved because I actually wanted to experience both. And the other location was closer to my university, to UVA. And actually, that was the reason, because like the first semester I was closer to VU because it was like a dual master in entrepreneurship, by the way. So it was better, like my location was better from West, and then we moved to UVA campus for the second semester. So it was better from city. Charlie, the social hub isn't just about accommodation, right? It's about, as we already know from what you're saying, it's about connection. How do you actually engineer that sense of belonging? Because we know that you trust, you put different people together, you trust you're gonna get along together. But do you do anything else? Like, is there any magic behind it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we're talking about the Student Hotel and the social hub. So we changed our name 2.5 years ago from the Student Hotel to the social hub. And we did that because we were much more than a student hotel. Yeah. And you started to see, I think when you were with us, as was just when we launched co-working in the building near the campus. And the co-working is designed to go out to the startup community and stuff like that. And since then, you know, we've added theaters, we've got rooftop bars, we've got swimming pools on our rooftops, we've got massive gyms, we've got all the locals that come in and stuff like that. So we felt for some time that we were much more than a student hotel. We wanted to rebrand to the social hub, keep TSH, of course, a little sort of internal nickname, which we're quite proud of, and put social in the middle of our name. Social, bringing people together, but social, you know, giving back and being a responsible business. So that's why we did that. I think when we're looking at, you know, how we do that, we have the foundational members, you know, like the students are a core community. You know, they're coming here, they're a very important era of their life, they want to make friends, and we facilitate that. Of course, their parents dropping them off, but play an important factor. The co-workers, you know, local businesses, startups, enterprise businesses, all using our co-working space. Again, they're seeing each other every day. They're coming in past the reception every day. They're getting to know the team every day. The locals who are using our space as their local working space or living room or whatever it is, again, they're getting to know everybody. So these three groups are seeing each other all the time. And therefore, they are a community without us doing anything. And what we do on top of that is we facilitate them organizing their own events. And we facilitate, I think, about 5,000 events across the whole portfolio now on a yearly basis. Special events, bringing people together, you know, focusing on the co-working communities, getting access to the next generation talent. You know, we bring in, we've got Rutger Brechmann, the famous the Dutch philosopher, coming into our building on June the 10th to talk about his new book, Moral Ambition. So we do things like that to really bring people together and build on the foundation that they're already making for themselves.
Awesome. I love it. Speaking of building, you know, building in like 20 plus cities across Europe, seems like a lot. How do you actually design spaces that fit in locally, but still feel like one global brand, you know? Because I've been, I also been to the student hotel in Paris. I don't know. Again, I call it the student hotel because I just remember it from that name. But the social hub, let's talk about social hub. How do you actually make that work?
Yeah, I don't even notice when you call these things. So it's funny, but we're as the social hub. So what we do, I mean, it's very simple. You know, we design a one big beating heart with one big entrance, and we try to get everybody to come in the same front door and into this space. Where we're encouraging serendipity, we're encouraging people to meet and connect. And from that beating heart, that middle space, you go into your co-working, you go to your theaters, you go to your meeting and event space, you go down to the gym, you go to the rooftop, you go to your bedrooms. You know, so that's how we try to do it. We generally have big buildings, you know, and we buy and develop our buildings ourselves, and then we operate them. So yeah. It's quite unique in today's hotel market. And most, you know, I think the average size of building is like 400, 450 beds. And then, you know, a few thousand square meters of co-working, and then you've got the bars and restaurants. But we try always to make that beating heart in the middle our main design principle.
I actually, by the way, I love design of the social hub. I didn't call it the student hotel this time. I love how it's designed. It's like very like nice, colorful, playful, very... very happy place. Speaking of buying, building, investing, you're a $2 billion company, dollar euro. What's the biggest lesson you've learned about building something, you know, so capital intensive while staying true to your mission?
Good question. I mean, sometimes I have moments where you're like, careful what you wish for, you know, but that's, you know, the moments that you think these things are really the moments that you learn. I mean, you know, thinking about COVID, it was a pretty traumatic period when you've got a business, any business size. I mean, it's kind of irrelevant how big it is if it's badly affected. But I guess what I've learned as we've gone bigger is your perspective changes. You know, when I first built our first project, you know, you had one building, you're there all the time, and then two buildings, and you have to split your time. And at some point, you can't, of course, split your time. You need to really build a very good team who are doing the work for you. So your perspective changes. You start to look at portfolios or regions or economies of scale slightly differently as well, because you start to see that really plays a factor in the profitability, in the efficiencies. And then those all tie into your fundability from a banking side, from investor side, and that enables your growth. So you move away from, you know, a concept, a nice idea as an entrepreneur. You know, I think if being an entrepreneur yourself, you know, you start off as sort of a brochure, and then you move into a website, and then you have a product, and then you're like, then you've got to prove your product works. So we've been through that whole journey, and now. And now we're really into sort of the next phase as a scale up, a decent sized scale up, and trying to really solidify the business.
So, Charlie, you know, it's not possible to not mention sustainability currently, and given all the young people you're also targeting, and so like the newer generation, the Gen Z, Gen Alpha, they all care about. Things that are meaningful about our plan, about sustainability. You're a B Corp, you know, with big ambitions. What's the hardest part about aligning impact and scale?
The hardest part has been proving to our investors that it's worth investing in. I mean, we're very lucky. We've got two big institutional investors behind us, mm-hmm. Very focused on ESG. I think traditionally investors are more focused on the E, you know, that's mm-hmm. where they kind of come from, especially in bricks and stones and buildings.
Yeah.
And yes, we build buildings BREEAM certified, and we've got a very high standard there. We've got GRESB and CREM and all the building labels. Mm-hmm. But I always felt that that's just one letter in those three letters of ESG. Okay. And we as a company, we're naturally excelling in the social. Again, that's one of the reasons why we put it in that word in the middle of our name.
Yeah.
The way that we're helping foster connections between next generation and existing businesses, the way that we regenerate neighborhoods, that we bring the neighbors into the hotels, and we offer them access to the facilities and things like that. So we are very social. We wanted to excel on that. And a couple of years ago, I pitched to them that I wanted to give 1% of our total revenues away for our own TSH Talent Foundation, mm-hmm. and I wanted to become a B Corp. And the arguments were quite challenging because I had to try to prove to them that this was, you know, a good investment strategy, a good yeah. way to use our money. And there's not that much data out there to really back you up. And I guess mm-hmm. now that we've got that permission, and we're now in the second year of our TSH Talent Foundation, this year we're going to have 140 odd scholars throughout our portfolio, second year of being a B Corp. My personal goal is to prove that I'm generating more business or direct B2B partnerships or direct bookings or direct whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So that I can go back to my investor and say, yeah, you're giving 1% away and you've got this cost of being a B Corp, but look what you're getting back in return. And my personal goal is if I can play that money game and I can convince my investors with a good mechanical story on how that ROI works, yeah. then I can go on to other businesses and C-suites and really encourage them also to become a B Corp or to invest in local activities and give something back.
Mm. Awesome. I'm super happy to hear that because it's so important. I mean, if you're not doing anything about climate change currently, then what the fuck are you doing, right?
But I mean, to be honest, I mean, even taking a step back, you know, the governments are pretty busy. I mean, they've got a lot of stuff going on, you know, yeah. and we're all neighborhood businesses. And I, especially, you know, the bigger ones, I really feel we should be taking a bit more responsibility in the neighborhoods and helping neighbor. And if you think about all the last 20 years, mm-hmm. especially in some of the smaller towns and villages, we've taken post offices out, the bakers out, the banks out, the libraries out, the community centers. There's nowhere for people to connect.
Yeah.
Some of these businesses, whether it's an office or a hotel or whatever, they have big lobbies and big spaces. And how do we just open them up and give them back? And by giving something back, that's where the magic happens, you know?
Yeah. So 100%. Charlie, we could probably do another podcast on that topic.
Let's do it.
Yeah, Glasgow, Rome, Porto, Florence. Expansion is booming, right? How do you decide where to go next? You told me already off the record, but
yeah. I mean, we have a plan, of course. You know, we're now in 8 European countries. Again, as I mentioned earlier, you know, from putting my business hat on, mm-hmm. economies of scale are very important. We see in Holland where we've got 7 hotels, then we're very efficient. Our penetration in the markets there, you know, you start to have a very efficient business. When I look to Spain, for example, we've got Barcelona, Madrid, and San Sebastian.
Yeah.
Three different languages, 3 different tax systems, 3 different legal systems, you know. So yes, we're in one country, but so we need to really try to, you know, have 2 or 3 in Barcelona, try to get, you know, some more in Madrid and the rest of Spain and stuff like that. So you start to look at the business through those lenses as well, and that mm-hmm. then zooms into countries and cities where we'd like to be and where we don't want to be, because we know that we're going to have, you know, only maybe 1 hotel there realistically. So I think we look at it through that prism. But yeah, we need, you know, good startup community, good level of corporate and leisure travelers, and of course, some nice universities. Yeah. And it needs to be a little bit of a fun place to be, you know?
100%. Charlie, what's one local community story from a social hub location that made you stop and think, all right, so this is why we do this?
I got a nice one for you. There's a guy, Yehun Chu. He was from South Korea. He came. He stayed in your building in TSH West. He was in a student, and he came for 6 months. And he had 11 flatmates, 11 roommates in his little wing, all from different countries. And he came to see me, and he said, "Hey, you know, really inspired by the 11 people. We've learned how to cook from each other. We've learned local customs. We've been learning words from all each other's countries and stuff like that. And it's been really inspiring. But I want to tell you that I was lying to my roommates." Uh-huh. And I was like, "Oh, okay, what do you mean?" He said, "Yeah, I didn't tell them the truth for a few years. I told them what I've been telling everybody coming from South Korea, what my status was." And I said, okay. And he said, "But because of the friendliness of the whole vibe of TSH about being open and sharing people and meeting all these different people," he said, "I told him the truth." And the truth was that his mother had committed suicide when he was younger. But the culture in South Korea is so embarrassed about this huge pandemic that they have over there of people not being happy and being overworked and overwhelmed and not taking holidays and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. The suicide rate is really high over there. And he felt the need to tell his community the truth. And his community were so excited that he'd told them the truth. They were like totally overwhelming him with love and kindness. Mm-hmm. That he was inspired to go back to South Korea and start a charity, which he did, called the Stella Foundation. It was the name of his mom, and tell people to start cheering, getting looking after themselves and mental well-being and stuff. So he went back to South Korea, inspired by the community within the social hub, and started a charity and started helping people understand that mental well-being and looking after themselves and is really, really important. And I think that's a story that really. This was back in 2015, and it really triggered me that the next generation are so powerful, are so exciting, and are so open for being vulnerable and sharing emotional stories and showing a part of them. And when you do that, again, beautiful stuff starts to happen. You start to see empathy and love and kindness and support. And that really inspired me to really kind of double down on this community and trusting and following from the heart and stuff like that.
Amazing. Such a story. It gave me a goosebumps, actually, at some
it's
point.
It's a beautiful story. It's really, beautiful. This guy was amazing. And he cycled, actually. We had a leaving party for him here. We gave him some money as his sort of car kickoff his foundation. And he cycled a bike all the way down to Cape Town or in South Africa, I think, somewhere in South Africa, raising money all along the way and stuff like that. And then he went off. But yeah, very inspiring. Inspiring guy, inspiring story.
Amazing. Thanks for sharing, Charlie. You've been at this for 20 years already. You've been doing the business. What still excites you? Of course, you just said the story and I ask you what still excites you. But maybe you can share a bit more. What still excites you when you walk into a new hub? And so that's one thing. And what's the next big frontier for the social hub?
So I get excited by people and by the connection. We're very blessed to have such a never-ending supply of next generation coming in straight off the mom and dad production line for their first year of university life, watching them come in, getting dropped off by mom and dad, and watching what happens when they leave. But also connecting, as I'm a bit older now, connecting to the moms and dads, when they're leaving and asking them, "Hey, what are you doing? You're going to go home, and how are you prepared for that?" and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And really connecting to all of them through their journey. Watching that next generation be very, very keen to connect to the co-working community. Mm-hmm. 97% of our co-working community are prepared and give time to our students for mentorship, for traineeship and stuff like that. So there's a real natural synergy where, of course, businesses are looking for next generation talent. You know, this is the hardest thing to find. So watching those moments still gives me a lot of goosebumps.
Amazing.
And I think the next big challenge for us is really, you know, we've transitioned into the Social Hub, new brand name. We're upgrading all of our 4-star hotel rooms. The rooftops have been launched in revamped, repositioned the bars and restaurants in there. Barcelona, we've got a nice opening for you coming up over the summer. We're upgrading all of the meeting and event spaces again. And we're really going to be doubling down on the community spaces and stuff like that. So really upgrading the whole portfolio and really taking that forward to try and double the size of the portfolio in the next 5-10 years.
Amazing. I love it. Charlie, so this is the time of the show where I play a little game, usually with my guests. It's kind of a rapid fire kind of question. So I shoot questions at you and you give me fast answers. Are you up for it?
I am, yes.
Awesome. Let's play. What's one belief about hospitality you've completely changed your mind on?
Oh, that is a good one. One belief of hospitality that I've completely changed my mind. That's hard because I'm kind of a disruptor of the industry. Yeah. So I've kind of come in and said, hey, guys, everything needs to change.
Everything's not working.
And looking at it from the outside, I have no hospitality training at all. You know, so I'm trying to change it from the inside, to be honest. I find that a hard one.
Nice. Cool. I like the answer. One lesson from Amsterdam that shaped how you build everywhere else.
Yeah, I mean, to make the heart, you know, to really double down on design and using design to stimulate the behavior you want in your customers is definitely a big taking. And also, as we got older, to try to build in some form of, you know, so I think 60% standardization and 40% local sauce, so we can really build at scale.
Nice. What's the most non-obvious skill every hospitality founder should master?
Non-obvious skill. I think being connected to people is pretty obvious, of course. I think what is interesting, maybe not as a just as a founder, to get off your CEO pedestal every now and again. I started a charity 10 years ago, and I started it by volunteering on the beaches in Greece, helping refugees. And I realized that as a founder, as a CEO, you're on a pedestal. You always have people around you who either want to do business with you or you've employed, so everybody kind of says yes. And when you get off that chair and you start getting into the streets, into the whatever it is, but getting your hands dirty, nobody knows who you are. It's really liberating. So I would encourage every founder to get off their CEO pedestal and just go and be and get some feedback where nobody knows who you are and stuff like that.
I love it. What's one industry best practice, like best practice you think is total bullshit?
Man, this industry, this hospitality industry was built on what they call a property management system. The property management system can tell you the history of room 404, how many times the bulb has been changed and how many times it's been painted and all the history. But it doesn't talk about the customer history. It is changing. It's been led by a tech platform called Muse. And we're working very closely with them, leading the way. But the history of a room has generally been more important for the hospitality industry than the history of a client.
Nice.
Yeah, work that one out. That's a good one, huh?
Yeah.
It is changing. And I do feel sorry for these big guys because they've got this huge monster of a technical beast. And then to turn it around and look at a room as not the Holy Grail, but just one of your spaces in your hotels is a hard one.
Yeah. And you mentioned Muse. You just got named the Innovator of the Year by them, no? Like recently,
was this I did get an award from them. Yeah, luckily, they're very kind to me there, and they're great. I mean, these guys, Richard Valter is a guy you should definitely have on this show. He's the founder of Muse. His goal is to eradicate receptions and door locks, basically, or keys. Mm-hmm. in a hotel. So you don't have to stand and, I mean, you think about it, you go into a hotel, they're typing away and you're like, what the hell are they typing? Yeah. You know? And then you've got to get this key, but we've got phones these days. I mean, everything's in here, you know, we can do it all online. We can get on a plane and just go. So together we're really pushing the boundaries of getting rid of keys and getting rid of check-ins and check-outs, mm-hmm. and empowering our staff to then be able to really genuinely connect with you and help you have a fun stay. So
nice.
That's where we're trying to head together.
Awesome. That sounds amazing. Charlie, let's get back to our little game. What's a city you dream of building a social hub in, even if it's totally wild?
You know, I'd quite like to be in America at the moment. I kind of think it feels it needs a little bit of a social hug. You know, like
that's a good name.
Bringing the two sides together, and you know, just saying, "Hey guys, you know, we've got more in common than we have that separates us. Let's just, start being normal with each other." I think maybe that's a good place I'd like to be today.
Nice. What's your favorite moment that happens in a hub that you know most people don't see? It's kind of behind the scene, you know.
That moment of when parents leave their students behind is still very, very special. But I think it's also watching when they leave, you know, there's a lot of tears, a lot of emotion, and watching them grow. And the coworkers have the same. I mean, coworkers coming in, you know, startups or small businesses, and watching them grow through where they're asking for more space. And suddenly, you know, they're too big. They have to leave us because they've grown their business within our walls. That's really, really exciting. In fact, we had it today. There's a guy who just came back. He's been he started with us with a small startup here in Amsterdam City. Took three desks, I think. Ended up taking like 40 or 50 spaces from us. Mm-hmm. Left, and now he's opening a second branch and he's starting here again. He came to tell me this morning. So super nice to see.
Nice. Amazing. Charlie, describe the perfect social hub day in 5 words.
Fun, vibrant, exciting, spontaneous, and happy.
Awesome. Now, finish the sentence. The future of hospitality is?
Hybrid.
Amazing. Charlie, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure to have you here on the show. I loved it. Such a fun conversation. I think audience will love it as well. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much. And I'll see you in Barcelona. Huh?